Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Kevin Boilo and Nazarita Goldhammer. Here we are at Epis Radio again. It is August 21st. We're broadcasting from the West Coast every Monday morning, with some small exceptions. And I suspect that at some point we're going to be broadcasting back from the mountains in Montana on Mountain Time in our travels. And our goal is to be world citizens, but also to find ways to be closer to the natural world, to be living in the dark sky, to see all the beings who we would otherwise forget. And so we're continuing on with the inner relational self. That is the self that cannot be alone, the self that can only be the self it is in relationship to others. And that's not just humans, but to all of life and all of life's beings as they form and transform and grow and evolve. This is our interrelational self. And it poses the question about humanity's intimacy or lack of intimacy with nature. That's the situation right now. There's strong arguments to be made that we have a lot of work to do to become more intimate with the radical other, not to alienate ourselves, not to fear, nothing like that, but to embrace, to respect, to honor. It's interesting, if you go back to the Nicomachean Ethics in Aristotle, and you start thinking about concept of friendship, the virtues in friendship, you would like to think of friends as somebody you go have coffee with. It's just a modern version. But a friend could be that crow, that squirrel, tree. It could be a path. It could be a stream. It could be a forest. And the model of friendship, I think, is a really interesting notion. It means that we have been befriended by the earth already. It has, all the beings of the earth and earth itself has already befriended us. And we have, it provides us with everything, always there, walking with us no matter what we do in life. And yet we return the gift of that friendship with destruction, domination, very, very small-minded, contracted sense of reality. And friendship is a good model because you think about the reciprocity involved in friendship. If you think about the honor of friendship, if you think about the virtues of friendship, the listening, the support, it starts to look like a pretty interesting model. It's a way of building character traits to be in the world, not to colonize the world, not to dominate the world, but to be in the world in a way that exemplifies the virtues of friendship. And number two, for today, I've also been thinking about how there's this overwhelming tendency in civilization, human civilization, to support and perpetuate the subject-object distinction. And the second you make that split, and it's a long thinking, years to think it through, years. The second we make that distinction, we hold in front of us objects or an object. And when you create an object, it's always subject to your own narcissism, your own desire, your own wherewithal, value system, whatever it is. That's the function of that metaphysical split in being and in the human being and in consciousness. And I think it has prevented us from being, allowing ourselves to be immersed and full participants in the gift of the planet that we've been given. This super narrow, it's like a little round band that's called the biosphere. It's not a nebulous concept, actually, and everybody should know that. It does actually have a technical meaning. The biosphere is the region of above the Earth and extending into the sky. So there's a width to it. And within those parameters, within those boundaries, we can exist. So for example, if we were to pollute the air really, really badly, we would destroy that part of the biosphere. We wouldn't be able to live. Similarly, if we overheat the region that's most close to the Earth, that's closest to the Earth, we're seeing how difficult it is to survive on the planet. So the biosphere is just a set of conditions. It can be mapped out. And beyond that, if you were to travel to the moon, you couldn't just go up there and survive. You have to wear special gear. So that's the whole point, is that it's a set of conditions within which we can live. And we're, the subject-object splittedness has propelled us into, I think based upon fear and all the other things that we've talked about, fear, covetousness, greediness, a type of self-structure that continues to be supported in human civilization that is highly motivated to colonize, to dominate, to be violent to or toward in every walk of life, even if we purport to be nonviolent. And I want to say there are a lot of people who appear to be nonviolent. And we're not so naive to understand that that's just false. You can actually oppress a people and then argue for nonviolence. You can oppress a culture. You can oppress animals. You can oppress people. And then you can lobby for nonviolence. Basically, what you're lobbying for is your continued domination. You have to be careful how you define violence. Violence is not just pulling a knife or a gun on the street corner and robbing somebody. Violence is something we do. It directly or indirectly. It can be subjective and individual, or it can be structural. So if you go back to nature and friendship towards nature, and if you start thinking about what it means to be a fully immersed participant in the biosphere, and how joyous this can be, then you start to see how distorted we've become, how far away we are, and the proof is in the outcome. And so I have Nazarita Goldhammer on the show. We're talking about nature from last time and what it means to be a full participant in the natural world and how it involves a meditation on our interrelational being. Welcome, Nazarita. We're here to listen to you.
Hi, good morning. You know, there's been a lot of great, what would you call them, philosophers that have been immersed in nature. I think of Henry David Thoreau and how, you know, he really wrote a lot on nature and immersed himself in nature. And you can't actually be a philosopher without knowing nature, truly, really, because otherwise you're just philosophizing about this limited place of humans. But, you know, Henry David Thoreau said this. He said, "By my intimacy with nature, I find myself withdrawn from man. My interest in the sun and the moon, in the morning and the evening, compels me to solitude." I think that's really interesting because I don't think as humans we actually know what real intimacy really is. I think that we're really afraid and we put up all kinds of protections and compartmentalization. If we're true to one person, we can't be true to two people. Do you see what I mean? Like, that's our compartmentalization against true intimacy. Or a lot of people think that, you know, you can only be intimate in all these ways with one person. You can't, if you expand, then they're kind of going against the internal rule of society that says this is the only person that you can have these feelings for, this trust, this intimacy. And we're speaking of intimacy in terms of you know, vulnerability, giving, respect, openness, sharing, being what people call authentic. And yet many people are horrified when they find out that somebody maybe is that way with other people. It's like what it does to the person who sees that in a lot of relationships is they begin to see that they are not that important. And I think we have this with nature. Like we don't trust nature. We don't respect nature, which is one of the reasons. I think we confuse trust with just full on without thinking. Like trust without thinking, without questioning, without anything, and yet without respect. So our intimacy with nature, if we were not so compartmentalized and we began to see our place in this web of life, we would have a different idea of what it means to actually be in nature, to live nature, to be a part of nature, an intricate part in how we relate to our own species and other species. I think that is maybe the key of decompartmentalization of our feelings and thoughts. I know many people, you know, share thoughts with trees and with other non-humans. And yet sometimes we're really foolish in our love of nature. We go hiking without bear spray. We go hiking in a bear's house, which is a natural protection for their babies. And we don't bring anything that says, "Hey, we respect your privacy. We're going to walk away and it's okay. We're not going to hurt you." And maybe animals have learned that humans are intrinsically violent. They're violent. They think of all kinds of torture devices. They find ways to hurt others. And I think we're really the only species I know that actually does that, that has premeditated violence, that actually thinks about how to create violence, how to use a normal, everyday object to create violence. I'm always horrified by this and don't understand the thinking behind it. I think you and I were talking about trash compactors, and I was thinking, wow, I haven't heard about anybody having those lately. And you said, well, they had used them to create violence with and compact other humans and non-human others. And I just thought, how could anybody even think of this? Like, how could your mind even go to that place? I just don't understand it. So I think that's part of how do we get out of that violence in ourselves that goes toward destruction as maybe even more readily than it goes toward wanting love and being generous and kind. In your estimation, don't you think compartmentalization is maybe the antipathy of actually being intimate with nature? Or compartmentalization, that's where we get these sayings, I'm going to have to go into nature. I need to get away, instead of incorporating nature and seeing our place, we think of it as out there. Just like we think of garbage, I'm going to throw it away, but we don't actually follow the process and know exactly where it goes, though it's becoming less hidden. It's becoming more transparent, just the same as eating meat is becoming more transparent to see where meat comes from. Or I love wild horses, but I don't care if they round them up and corral them and then sell them for horse meat. You know, I love bears, but I'm going to kill them so I can obtain their claws or their teeth for a necklace. Or, you know, I think deer are really beautiful, but I'm going to put their head on my wall. And so the compartmentalization within humans is we're compartmentalizing our destruction and our love as separate. Like, I can be violent, but I can still love you and be violent towards you. There seems to be some gray area in that which says this doesn't equate. I can love you, but I can be violent towards you, which is, to me, the antipathy of love, obviously.
Yeah, certainly. I think our very way that we think about things is just distorted. In other words, the basic position within which or from which humans think about everything is distorted. It runs through a filter of violence, destruction, capitalism, fear, win-lose dynamics. And so when you objectify, when you have a tendency to objectify everything, there's also a tendency to objectify to use. We don't create this psychological, phenomenological split between subject and object primarily as a way to love the other. It was never designed that way. It was always designed to use the other, whatever the other is. Earth resources, animals, some humans, water. So the very notion, the ideas about friendship and love and intimacy have been confused. You know, the example that maybe we gave recently involve people who butcher their own animals, and they will say in one on the left hand they'll say, I really love this chicken, and on the right hand they'll cut its head off and they'll call that love. Or the whole tough love mode of parenting, which can be really violent. And I think very destructive. If you have a tendency, first of all, if you live within fear, and if you live within capitalism, where the general assumption is that people are going to steal your stuff, and it's competitive, you have to hoard your stuff, and you have to fight like heck to survive. There's such a lack of community in that. And we all end up instrumentalizing each other. If you look at the whole idea behind business, it means going to the market and engaging in some kind of exchange. But even that is kind of strange, because it means trying to get the best deal you can, trying to get one up on somebody. So one up means there's some implications. One cultural implication is, well, we should be able to go out into the world and work hard and take whatever we can get. When one of the earliest property laws in the United States, it's still buried in the law as a deep concept, that when you go out into nature and with your own hands take nature, like take a tree or take an animal, it becomes yours. Where if you in some way use natural processes for yourself, it becomes yours. Part of the idea was we wanted to encourage people to take nature, that somehow we thought that was a good thing to civilize the world. But you can see how that has led to a history of bloodshed, about stealing somebody else's property, decimating forest lands and prairie lands, annihilating other species, because we've had it in our mind, and I'm just speaking of America right now, that everything was ours for the taking, that God had somehow provided this bounty. This was ours, that this superior being, all-encompassing God, said, this is all of yours, go get it. And another false belief was that it was unlimited. We know that that's not true, and we also know that the belief in God is complete irrationality. It's silly. It's childlike. It's a child mythology that hopefully we will all grow out of soon. But it's a pretty convenient thing, isn't it, Nazarita, when I can just conjure up a reason for doing anything. I can say, well, God told me to do that. God came to me in a dream. God commanded me to. And so we have this transformation of so-called God's law into natural law, into human law, where we have all these exchanges with a bunch of false beliefs, and we're still doing it. We're still engaged in taking coal, fossil fuel, trees, waters, every kind of resource that you can find. Humans want to go after it. And they don't do it for charity. They don't do it to protect the earth. They do it to make money. At any level you are at in the food chain, the people who are the wealthiest, who own the biggest corporations, are out exploring to take more and more of the earth and try to con people into believing that that's a good thing. The ideology mostly has been in the United States that you want to go along with the big corporate giant, because that way you'll have a job and you'll be able to survive. And so you go along with it. And people start believing that, yeah, well, maybe that's the right way to think about things, that I have to work hard to feed my family. You see, that's another competition. I have to work hard to feed my family. You have to work hard to feed your family. And there's always going to be a disagreement about that. Now, you can enter into quid pro quo agreements. You can create all kinds of business ethics and contract laws, civil tort laws. But it's all based upon a system, a deeper thinking that has already lost value. That's the problem. It's already lost value. So nature, if you start thinking about our interrelational self, just apply some really simple reasoning. We really do rely on nature. Let me say it in a better way. We rely on the resources of the natural world. We rely on them. We're already unwittingly fully participating in the earth. And I said something earlier, so in such a way that you may think I'm making an inconsistent statement now, but I'm not. The way we participate in change is not just one way to participate in a relationship. And so if you think about how we participate, whenever you have a domination model, even within the human population, you can come up with all kinds of words that characterize the nature of that relationship. Well, we do that with natural resources. It's a relationship. We can't get out of the fact that we are interrelational. And we should hammer on that. We should repeat it a million times. We are full participants in the biosphere of this planet, necessarily. And we have participant partners. We have other stakeholders. But we have somehow anointed ourselves as the only stakeholder, and everybody else gets some kind of charity, maybe every now and then. Charity.
You know, I was just thinking that part of this, again, back to the disconnection, or making sure everything kind of connects, that we as humans are really a disconnected species. I remember a movie that this was really funny. So the guy, I think it was Woody Harrelson, and he saw chickens being harmed, and he was really upset. And so he went and saved the chickens, and then he went and ate a piece of fried chicken. And the person with him was like, so you just went and saved those chickens, but what are you eating? And Woody Harrelson said, it's not the same. And I'm like, this is exactly the disconnect that humans have. I'm going to save those live chickens, but I'm going to eat chicken. And it's just, it's like such an unusual paradox. I think of this too, the disconnection, which is alienation, obviously, is that with plants. So I like a lot of supplements. I like a lot of herbal products. And yet, to really see where they come from, like to see the actual plant, is very similar to loving animals, but then eating animals. It's this disconnect that we tend to have because everything has become compartmentalized in our culture. You know, meat is wrapped, dyed with dyes, so nobody knows really where it comes from, or they know kind of where it comes from, but they don't see all the process. So like herbs, herbs, herbs in a lot of supplements, they come from natural products, like a bush. Like, here's what I think of. I saw a bouquet of St. John's wort in Trader Joe's, and I was like, wow, this is so great, because most people who take St. John's wort, which is a great relaxative, it is antispasmodic, it's really helpful in a lot of, it's great for an oil, and yet most people don't know that that bouquet of St. John's wort, which has berries, is the same as the oil that they're using for their body. And it's the same as, like, remember, patchouli. So I happen to love patchouli. And you always think of it just as an oil, right, that you put on. But patchouli is a really beautiful plant. It's actually a bush, and it grows, and it's the leaves and the stems that are used for the oil. It has fragrant flowers. And I just think this is so amazing. If you could see it and say, this is where it comes from. This is my connection with nature. Nature produces this oil that smells so good. And yet the disconnect is, I'm wearing patchouli, but I have no idea where it comes from. Like, I have no idea if I passed it by and it attacked me, I would never know, because I don't know what that bush looks like. I don't have any connection to nature. It's like what people do, you know, truthfully to wildlife. They read all these books and they have this image in their mind of, you know, cuddly, beautiful, furry little animals. And so they forget that these are real. And when they see them in real life, they don't know how to act. They don't know how to relate. They don't know how to respect nature and the individuality that comes through nature and the biosphere. I mean, here we are putting additives, pesticides in our dirt, which percolate down to the water, and then we wonder why our water is contaminated. And as you know, so many people now are experiencing contaminated water, and yet they're still putting pesticides on their lawn, but complaining about the water that is containing contaminants. It's like, this is hard for me to understand, this kind of disconnect. And only when I bring it to things like plants or something that I really love and do the research to say, well, what is its origin? What is the origin of this? And I think that's where a lot of people don't understand how to get to the origin of even how they live. And isn't that what we're talking about? It's like our deep, authentic self, the origin of our love and kindness. Instead, we follow someone else's rules, like you were talking about religion, you know, that is constantly saying, this is how you should live. But who made that religion? Humans, in their very biased, detrimental way. And you could say it was the word of God, but, you know, if you're saying thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's oxen, you can pretty much see where if God really didn't say that, you know, let's really look at that kind of behavior and see what that really looks like. Follow the connection. That's critical thinking.
Right. You know, a lot of what we wrote about, gosh, it's been 5 or 6 years now, in overcoming the, you know, the humanism, the idea that humans are at the center of the biosphere, and it's not working. It's a deep philosophical move that's really not working. It's caused so much destruction. And so we wrote this book suggesting a different way of viewing it. And we can use fancy words if you want. But it's, in other words, rethinking the place of the human in the biosphere rather than dominators, something else. And I think people are having a hard time with that, Nazarita. I think that people are so white-knuckling it through life, so afraid have so much fear, fear of not having enough. And then you throw on top of it capitalism and a competitive model. It's like a storm. And we will continue to take and take and take as a species. So the one of the great examples, I think, is Africa, maybe the best one. So there's such a competition for food and money. They are eradicating what's left of pristine resources. They are eradicating what's left of large land mammals. My prediction is that we are going to have fewer than 1,000 elephants alive in Africa within 25 years. We had 3 to 5 million only 50 years ago. We've killed them all. We've killed them. And we're doing the same thing with rhinoceros and hippopotamus and tiger, lion, all over the world. Tiger in India, lion in Africa, hyena. And we're going to see a situation, and then we're doing the same thing. Another great example is the Amazon. So most people now know that trees sequester carbon. We breathe oxygen, we give off carbon, the trees suck it up, and that's how the trees flourish. Their carbon sinks, they hold carbon. And the Amazon rainforest is one of the, is probably the biggest carbon megaforest in the world, in the biosphere. And we're chopping it down. We're changing the mathematics of the Amazon so that now in some regions of the Amazon, it's no longer sequestering carbon, natural function, but it's releasing carbon. Releasing carbon causes global warming. It's a global warming gas. It goes up into the atmosphere. It prevents, like wearing a blanket. If at night you put on a blanket and then at 3 o'clock in the morning you feel like you're too hot, you take the blanket off. Well, in this case, the blanket is carbon. Methane is another gas, but carbon is one that we can talk about. And so we're going against what we know to be true. This goes back to what you're saying, Nasrita, how we fragment our thinking. I might say, well, I love the Amazon. It's so beautiful. And then at the same time, buy stock in a company that's eradicating the Amazon. I'm buying stock in this company because I want to get rich. I want to take care of my family. I've got my retirement to think about. And it's this whole system in every domain, science, politics, aesthetics, art, philosophy, education, healthcare, the whole constellation of systems supports the continued domination, eradication, and destruction of really vital pieces, parts of the biosphere. And it doesn't seem very friendly if you go back to that metaphor of friendship. Like, okay, here's another one. We were just talking about this recently, how people talk about letting nature take its course. So if you see an injured animal, the old wisdom was leave it alone. If it dies, it dies. But that is a falsification of our interrelational being. If you see an animal struggling, help it in some way. But people don't want to do that. They don't want to take responsibility because we've been so ingrained to avoid. And you can see that, let nature take its course. Let's talk about that. Letting nature take its course means that we're somehow separate from nature. That nature's out there. And I want to put forth the idea, Nazarita, that nature is a word that means all of being on this planet. Nature is all of being on this planet. It is all possibilities. It is the intersection of all actualities and all possibilities. It is where all transformation occurs. It is the horizon of our projects in life. It's the horizon of meaning. So we have just a few minutes left. Why don't you take us to close, if you'd like?
Well, I'll just say a few things, and then you could add to this. So this is really interesting, our conflict with nature is that I think it boils down to that we think that other species don't have any meaning on the earth. Like they're just there, again, for maybe this religious purpose to so we can use them. But that's why we kill out wasps that have a great importance in the ecosystem, and we kill out ants because we're afraid of them. We really don't put any meaning, that we don't see how they work with nature, how they are sustaining our very being. We cut trees down without realizing that we take oxygen from them. Instead, we want to use them. And my last thing is, there's this saying that says, live in the now. But what I think people have done when they hear that, they believe that they use everything that they have now. Who cares about the future? And that's why we're in this position that we're in, that we're not thinking about our future, anyone else's future. We're raping, pillaging the earth and killing animals to say, well, this is now, we're going to use everything we have.
We'd recently written about and do talk about quite a bit violence. We always will. And just in hearing our conversation today, stepping back in the remaining moments that we have, it's so apparent to me that violence is such a non-reflective, non-thinking response to a situation, to life, that there's always a way to create peaceful coexistence without being violent, to think it through, to look for solutions rather than to kill. And it's like our knee-jerk reaction as humans. Well, let's just kill it. I mean, we're seeing it play out in national politics in the United States. Let's just kill it. Let's kill them. So we'll continue our discussion next week talking about nature and our interrelational being. Everybody have a good week. This is Epis Radio signing out.